Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Ty Bannerman. Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham recently announced that New Mexico public school districts would have the option of reopening under several different in-person schooling models starting February 8th. But many New Mexicans have questions. Will this return be safe? What happens if COVID rates increase? And what options are on the table for districts looking to enact one of the hybrid models? This morning, we are digging into the state's plans for getting districts, teachers, and students ready for in-person learning, and we want to hear from you. Are you happy to learn that New Mexico students may be returning to school soon? Or are you worried about the continued risks of COVID-19 transmission? Do you think the benefits of in-classroom learning outweigh the risks of COVID, or are New Mexico leaders rushing the decision? Email us at letstalk@kunm.org, tweet to us at #letstalknm, or call in live at 505-277-5866. My first guest is Ryan Stewart, the Secretary of Education for the state of New Mexico. Good morning, Secretary Stewart.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. So can you walk me through how this reopening plan will work?
Absolutely. And let me first say that this is a really important first step in this process. Again, we still have a long way to go in the journey to get all of our kids back all the time, but we're excited that we're at a point in the virus based on the hard work all New Mexicans have done to be able to expand in-person learning options. Mm-hmm. So there are basically three options that our schools and our districts have. One of them is to expand into the hybrid model, and this is something that many of our elementary schools in the state did. It's up to local control whether or not they want to choose that model. But if they do, it means they can bring half the kids so that we can maintain social distancing, half the students at any given time. And typically that's done 2 days a week with a break in the middle for cleaning, disinfecting, and then the other cohort comes the other 2 days a week. We know that there's going to be districts who aren't quite ready to get all the way back up to hybrid. And so for those schools and districts, they have the option to bring in small groups of students. So they can bring in, and in the fall, we had a limitation on this where it was only pre-K through 3 and students with disabilities. Mm-hmm. And we've removed that limitation. So you can bring in smaller groups of students for access to in-person learning as you're ramping up to hybrid. And then for our smallest schools in the state, those who have less than 100 students, who typically have, you know, classrooms of 3, 4, 5 students, they can bring all of their students back, but again, keeping them in those small groups.
Okay. And so I have also on the line right now, I have Christine Maley. She is a teacher at Garfield Middle School, which is in the Albuquerque public school system. Good morning, Christine.
Hey, good morning.
So as a teacher, what is your reaction to the possibility of returning to the classroom under a hybrid model like Secretary Stewart is describing?
Yeah, like every teacher in Albuquerque, I bet last night I was watching the board meeting to see how our board would decide on this. Mm-hmm. And I am so grateful that they've postponed hybrid for us because I just don't think that we are ready. I don't think it's safe enough to come back yet. They've done a lot of mitigation, and my building especially, my administration's been on top of it. We've had a committee working on it. Mm-hmm. It's as safe as it could be, but it's still not safe enough, and I'm not confident that they can keep us all safe.
So what are your main concerns about returning to school if APS were to reconvene and vote to return to school on February 22nd?
Sure. We've waited all this time, and we finally have a vaccine. We are so close, and that's the only way that we can ensure that not only the teachers and the staff in the schools are safe, but also like our whole community, right? Mm-hmm. Because not only would we be bringing the virus back home to our families, but our students will be bringing it back home. Mm-hmm. And I know this year especially, I've seen the loss that kids have suffered in their families. I've been teaching for almost 15 years. I've never had a year where more than one grandparent has died. Mm-hmm. And this year I had 1 week where two-week period where 3 kids lost grandparents. And that's traumatic and horrible, and I can't imagine how a kid would feel if their teacher died or if they thought they were responsible for the death of their parents. It's just not worth the risk.
What would it take for you to feel safe in returning to schools, to in-classroom learning?
as soon as I get both doses of the vaccine and it has time to become effective, I will be back in my classroom as soon as they will let me.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us this morning. I know that you have to get to teaching in just a few minutes here, so we won't take any more of your time. So back to you, Secretary Stewart. A lot of people are expressing concerns about the state allowing the possibility of returning to in-classroom learning without the vaccine being widely available to teachers. What were the considerations that led to allowing that to occur?
Yeah, I think the concerns out there, we've certainly heard them. We listen to them and take them very seriously. And we wouldn't be making this decision if we didn't feel that it was supported by the data and the science. Mm-hmm. And we also wouldn't be making it if we hadn't done a number of very important things to make sure that classrooms are mitigating risk to the greatest extent possible.
Mm-hmm.
So if we look at the science and the data, and even last week, CDC, Journal of the American Medical Association, they've all come out with additional data and information showing that if you have the proper measures in place, that schools can operate relatively safely, mm-hmm. even in this climate. The other thing is we've been looking at our data here in New Mexico. We now have a semester's worth of data for those schools who have been operating in the hybrid model. And the good news is that the mitigation strategies that we have in place are working. Where there have been cases, we've been able to isolate them quickly. We haven't seen evidence of significant spread of the virus in schools. And it's really a testament to the work of the educators, the school leaders, the district leaders, and the frontline staff who have really stepped up to make sure we've got COVID-safe practices in place in all of our schools. The last thing I would say is we've put in a number of very strict measures to make sure that the buildings are safe, procuring and distributing millions of units of PPE, mm-hmm. making sure that everybody has masks, making sure that social distancing is in place, cleaning supplies and protocols are there. We have the most advanced indoor air quality standards of any state in the country, wow. and a number of other measures in partnership with our Department of Health to make sure that we are vigilant in the classroom.
I have a call from Liotta in Corrales. Good morning, Liotta. Hi, are you there, Liotta?
Hi, yes, I am.
Yes. What is your question or comment this morning?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
So
this is about UNM, but it's also facing the problems of being pressured to return to in-person learning or not. And we actually already have some in-person modes.
Mm-hmm.
So my comment as a graduate student at UNM who works as a teaching assistant is that UNM policy has been left up to individual faculty members, not the grad students who are the people that would actually be in the classroom. And the biology department in particular has said no teaching assistant will be forced to return to face-to-face rather mm-hmm. than remote mode. But I believe the stance needs to shift to collecting a list of people who want to teach in person rather than putting the burden on the individual to refuse and put their livelihood on the line.
Okay. Well, thank you, Liotta. I also have a call from Mike in Albuquerque. Good morning, Mike. What is your question or comment?
Hi, I'm sorry, my technical difficulties here.
Sure.
there's a rumor running around town, the community, that this is really all about athletics. And that, you know, this is all, you know, they've come down with these rules where, you know, you can have people playing football and basketball, but you can't have a band or you can't have a choir. So, you know, this is really about athletics. And, I mean, I really challenge a lot of what the secretary has said. I'm trained as a scientist. I'm watching the COVID stuff. A lot of the data that is a bit amorphous. And, you know, and frankly, I don't think PED cares about the health of teachers at all. And if they did, it would be do what Colorado is doing and try to get them all vaccinated. But since PED doesn't care about that, you know, we're left moving, you know, 50 and 60 year old teachers into class, forcing 50 and 60 year old teachers into classrooms, which we are going to do or they get laid off. And, you know, we're basically into petri dishes.
Okay, well, thank you for your call, Mike. I want to go ahead and ask you a little bit about the role that athletics and considerations for bringing athletics back played in the state's decision to allow reopening. Does Mike have a point about the role that athletics played, Secretary Stewart?
So I would say at the very core, the founding principle of what we've been focused on throughout the pandemic has been prioritize the health and safety of our educators, of our students, of our families. That's the number one guiding principle, even as it's written down in our reentry guidance. So we've had to make a lot of really tough decisions on that, put in the restrictions that we do have, limit the amount of in-person learning, and do so in accordance with the science. And athletics has been very much not a driver of any of these decisions. If athletics were a driver of our decisions, we would have had kids back in on the football fields and in the gyms back in August. Mm-hmm. We didn't do that, despite a lot of criticism, a lot of anger. It wasn't a popular decision, but we felt it was a decision that was in the best interest of the health and safety of our community, of our state. So that was certainly not the driver. And even as we're returning, it's secondary. And we've said number one priority, get kids back into the classroom. All those students who want to go back into the classroom, we know that many will remain online, and that is perfectly understandable. But athletics certainly hasn't been a driver. And one thing I would just say to Mike, the caller there, this has been one of the biggest problems and challenges, I think, as we try to navigate this. Reasonable people can disagree about the choices that we make and the decisions that come down. But at the core, everybody is a human wanting to do what's in the best interest of other humans in the state. So to say things like you don't care about the lives of teachers, you don't care about the lives of students, just couldn't be any further from the truth. It is the number one thing that we think about when we wake up and the last thing we think about when we go to bed. And we wouldn't be making many of the decisions that, again, are very tough, not always popular, that we have for the last year if the care for students, the care for educators wasn't there.
Right.
And just look at New Mexico versus many other states. We did not take the same course as your Floridas, your Georgias, and many others who brought everybody back quickly, masks optional, saw major outbreaks, kept going. That has not been our course at all.
Now, is there any way, I mean, we're talking about bringing students back into the classroom, and of course, we're, you know, kids being kids, they're maybe likely to engage in risky behaviors. Is there any way to kind of make sure that the kids follow safe practices? How can the state support districts in doing that?
Well, I think what we've seen, and again, we have a full semester's worth of actual on-the-ground data now from those schools who have been operating, our kids have really stepped up. Mm-hmm. Kids are wearing masks. Kids are staying socially distant. It's not always perfect, and teachers have to teach these routines, make sure that they're strictly enforcing them. Children are children. But at the end of the day, even those who are coming back and wearing a mask and having to stay more socially distant, play in a different manner, they appreciate the fact that they're able to come back. They've gotten used to it. Kids adjust, and we keep moving forward.
So it's kind of, maybe I should give them a little more credit.
Yeah, kids are resilient, and they're gonna make things work. So it requires the ongoing vigilance of school leaders and teachers, but our kids are capable of doing this.
Okay, we are going to go to a quick break. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Ty Bannerman. We'll be back in a moment.
If you could personally thank a musical artist who's been an inspiration for you, who would it be and how would you thank them? Composer Ivan Trevino expressed his gratitude by writing songs. We'll hear his thanks for David Byrne and more on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Corporate media got you fed up? You're not the only one. On the next Alternative Radio, hear Jeff Cohen and Janine Jackson on Cutting Through Corporate Media BS. That's Alternative Radio, Saturday evenings at 6, right here on 89.9 FM KUNM, KUNM.org, Albuquerque.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. We are taking your calls about Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham's plan for school districts to start getting kids back into the classroom. Do you feel comfortable about your children going back to school? Give us a call at 277-5866 and let us know. I have a call from Chase in Albuquerque. Good morning, Chase.
Good morning.
What is the comment or question that you'd like to add today?
The comment is, I'm a seventh grader from middle school, and I just wanted to share how there's no reason not to go back because other states have returned full time, and even though I get good grades, I'm still struggling. It's really hard to push through and stay motivated because most kids have not been motivated to stare at a screen. Mm-hmm. But I certainly think if we go back and we can continue, we can enjoy learning, play sports, and be a part of a community again. And our teachers are telling us that they want to go back. And I believe most students also want to go back. And one of my teachers said 30% of one class is failing. And some kids in another class have only showed up three times in the full three mm-hmm. quarters that I've been a part of. And so I believe all of us kids can keep our teachers safe, and we need to return immediately.
Okay, well, thank you so much for calling in, Chase. So Secretary Stewart, elementary schools, as you mentioned, have been able to open for a while in this hybrid kind of model, but middle and high schools were not due to a perception of higher risk among those kids. How can districts ensure that this reopening will be safe for the older students?
So, thanks for that question. And to Chase, I just want to say, this has been the toughest year that we've had, and I do appreciate you voicing your perspective and with such passion, and wish you the best as you progress forward here in this next phase. With respect to your question there, mm-hmm. the safety with middle school and high school, it's wound up in the myriad COVID-safe practices that I talked about before. So what we're seeing is that if you are keeping kids socially distant, if you are limiting the number of students in the space to begin with, if you are practicing those good hygiene practices and so on, schools are actually safer than remote learning. And what our data has been showing is that when we look at students and teachers who have confirmed cases of the virus who have been teaching and learning remotely, the likelihood that they catch the virus is actually slightly higher than those who have been teaching or learning in person.
Interesting.
And that's data that you wouldn't necessarily expect, but I think it points to the fact that we have a lot of very strict protocols in place at schools. Those same protocols may not be in place in the community at large. Mm-hmm. And so our schools are operating pretty safely.
Okay. And I have a question from Matt in Albuquerque. Good morning, Matt.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, what would you like to add to the conversation?
Just a general comment, or actually a question. With the budget being tight and, talk about budgets for school, APS has historically seen a lot of cuts. Are there any talk about incentives, such as hazard pay, like we see in the retail world, for essential workers in the retail? We're getting an extra couple dollars an hour. Where's the incentive for teachers? Also, where's the incentive of, representation to make sure that those teachers do get vaccinated? I think there's a lot of people right now getting vaccinated that are probably more prone to stay home, and teachers should be, in my opinion, in that first group. It's mm-hmm. essential to get public school back online.
Okay, thank you, Matt. So, Secretary Stewart, has there been any discussion of providing hazard pay to teachers?
Yeah, those are two really great questions. So let me talk about the hazard pay one first. So first of all, there are a lot of decisions that can get made at the local level. So the state doesn't control or dictate the terms of payment when it comes to hazard pay. And I think certain districts may choose to make that choice. Others may not. What we're doing at the state level is we're using some of the funds that were made available to the state through the latest round of the federal funding to look at how we can provide additional supports to districts and charter schools for their workers, things like Can we make sure that people are kept whole with their sick pay and other strategies to make sure that we are able to provide either as much incentive or take away as much of the worry that we can? Now, the resources that we have at the state level are limited. Mm-hmm. Most of the money goes directly out to the districts and charter schools. But we're actively working to address some of those issues.
Okay. I have a quick thought here about this is an email question. Will the health measures that the state is asking schools to comply with to enter into the hybrid model, will those be inspected by health officials or school officials? How will we make sure that they're maintaining those?
So before any school can move into the hybrid model, it actually has to have an on-site inspection to make sure that all of those health protocols and systems are in place. So Public mm-hmm. Education Department has been partnering with fire marshals from across the state to actually go through each school building and do that inspection to make sure all of those systems are there. And we also have an online portal where people can anonymously report if they're seeing violations, and so that we can go out and get those addressed and fixed and take remedial actions as may be required to make sure that we have strong compliance.
Okay, thank you. So we are also joined this morning by Dr. Melissa Mason, a pediatrician with Journeys Pediatrics and a contributor to the Your Child's Health column in the Albuquerque Journal. Good morning, and thank you for joining us, Dr. Mason.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Certainly. And the number one question that is on everyone's mind, and we're seeing this reflected in the email comments and callers' questions. Is this return to school, is it safe for kids to return to in-person learning?
Yeah, it's a great question and a common thing we discuss in my office with just about every family I see. And I do believe it is safe. Mm-hmm. What we know, and I recognize it's scary, especially for teachers who, while they are on the priority list for vaccines, I don't know why they're not considered essential workers, mm-hmm. because they are, and they really need to be moved up in priority to get vaccinated. However, with all of the other safety measures in place, there is no reason that our kids and teachers and school staff can't safely return to in-person learning. We've now had the time to see, not only in our state, but in other states and actually around the world, for schools that have remained in-person learning for the duration of the pandemic, we are just not seeing the spread that I think people are concerned about. There's a lot of data to show that, especially in the younger school ages, mm-hmm. kids who get COVID are not picking it up at school. They are picking it up from their household contacts who are getting it from the community. Mm-hmm. Teachers and school staff who are picking up COVID, they actually spread it more to each other, and they are also getting it from the community. Mm-hmm. So the concern about teachers and school staff getting sick from the kids in their classrooms is actually, we're not seeing that to be true.
Okay. So I know that younger kids, as you mentioned, have been seen as being pretty resistant to COVID-19, at least as far as symptoms are concerned. But could they act as asymptomatic carriers and spread COVID to other students in the classroom or to adults?
Well, that's certainly possible, but I don't think it's a high risk. Mm-hmm. And especially if kids are wearing their masks, if students are being distanced, if they're limiting the numbers, they're creating cohorts, kids are washing hands, have access to hand sanitizer, the risk is really quite, quite low.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about older students in middle and high school?
So I think that it's a little bit easier to spread only because of, they are social. They like to be closer together. But again, if students are being expected to follow those protocols that have been put in place, there should not be any increased spread with them versus younger ages as long as those protocols are being followed.
Now, having looked at the state's return models, do you think that they're sufficient to ensure the safety of kids and students and teachers?
I do. I think that they've clearly spent time looking at data and trying to implement procedures that will maintain safety for kids and adults who are back on campuses.
Mm-hmm.
My I have a couple concerns. One is, you know, the requirement for surveillance testing, which is great. My concern is, will we be able to pull that off? Mm-hmm. And the second, which I know has been mentioned, but I want to look at it from a different slant, with regard to athletics, I guess, and maybe Secretary Stewart, you can answer this. I don't quite understand why the requirement is for a school to be back in hybrid model before athletics are able to resume, because these things are not during school hours, often outside, and following the protocols that have been laid out for, you know, safe return to athletics. My concern is for kids to not have access to these really critically important activities, exercise, while waiting for in-person or some sort of in-person. So that was the other question I had about the plan to return.
Mm-hmm. Secretary Stewart?
Thanks. And if I could, Melissa, you mentioned something at the beginning of what you were saying about vaccines. I just wanted to address and make sure it was clear. Our teachers are considered essential and are prioritized in the vaccine distribution. So any educator who is a healthcare worker, so those are our nurses, our health assistants, they are actually in the 1A group, that first group of healthcare workers, and have been able to be vaccinated now for a while. Any educator who is 75 years or older, or who has medically fragile underlying conditions, is in the current subgroup for vaccination. And then that next group is the critical frontline workers. And so as we're making our way through the 75 and older and the medically fragile, the priority group that teachers are in is that first priority group after those who are potentially most medically at risk. So our teachers are on that list. We do recognize the importance of getting them vaccinated. That's something that I want to make sure everybody hears, because we as administration completely agree that putting a premium on getting our public school educators and staff back vaccinated into the classroom is a priority.
Okay. Thank you. I have a call from Courtney in Albuquerque. Good morning, Courtney. What is your question or comment?
Yeah, hi. I live in Albuquerque, but I work up in Santa Fe.
Okay.
And I just want to kind of point out some of the practicalities of returning to a hybrid model. We've been completely online and digital for since March, and it looks like it's going to pretty much remain that way through at least, spring break. But, you know, I go into the school twice a week to, take care of the library and receive books and stuff like that. And one of the things that I've noticed is that if we have social distancing in our classrooms, there are two things that's going to happen. The first one is that for our 7th through 12th graders, we're going to have about three kids or mm-hmm. four kids in every classroom. Right. Three or four kids in every classroom. Okay?
Right.
So that's the first thing. The second thing is our internet infrastructure at the school is completely antiquated mm-hmm. and is unable to support a hybrid instructional environment. So unless the school district is going to throw a ton of money into every single school in order to upgrade the internet infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
this is going to be completely impractical. And the third thing is, are we going to double the number of teachers? Because I cannot imagine being able to run an online class
mm-hmm.
and an in-person class at the same time and offer the quality of instruction that I am really proud to offer in my classroom. I do not run a classroom that's a lecture-based class. It's very cooperative. We create these very authentic units through Harvard Project Zero, and I am really trying to wrap my head around how this is going to work. I think all of us need to acknowledge the reason for reopening schools. That one of the big reasons is that schools are essentially child care centers.
Mm.
And parents need schools so that somebody can watch their children when they go back to work. And, like, we need to be obvious and acknowledge this. And if we are really committed to this, We need to hire more personnel. We need to upgrade the internet infrastructure at the schools, particularly in rural school districts. And we need to get all of the teachers vaccinated before they come back into the school, because the practicality of this is just mind-boggling. There are so many moving parts, and I can't imagine that this is going to be really, really well done across the board. It's just going to be a disaster.
Well, thank you for sharing your thoughts, Courtney. Secretary Stewart, I want to go to you for your response.
Yeah, first, I just want to thank Courtney for her work as a teacher. Our teachers have put in more this year than ever, and so thank you for that and for sharing. And as Courtney said, there are going to be a lot of local decisions about whether or not hybrid is the right move for a particular district or a particular school. We don't anticipate that every district and school is going to want to go to hybrid. Some of them may have some of the challenges that Courtney laid out, and they think it's better to stay in remote. And we respect that decision does need to be made at the local level now that we've put in place. But now that we've put in place all of the safety measures to create safe conditions, and now that we're confident that we can operate it safely, the state is simply saying that we're not going to restrict those schools and districts for whom the hybrid model does work. And I've been both physically and virtually in many classrooms across the state where you actually do have teachers who have students who are in front of them, students who are online, and they're reaching both audiences, and they've been making it work. And I've also had teachers and students where they have the people who are in front of them who are learning synchronously, and those who are at home learning asynchronously, and they've been making that model work. So there's lots of ways to operationalize it. Not everybody will want to do that. Not every school will feel effective at that. And we at the state respect that that's going to happen. We know Roswell just took a vote to go back into hybrid. And as I was talking to those board members, they have a very different perspective than maybe the Santa Fe community that we just heard from. And so we'll see some of that variation throughout the state.
Okay. And we have Erica from Albuquerque on the line. Good morning, Erica. Erica, are you with us?
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to?
Hi. Good morning.
What would you like to bring to this conversation today?
Yes, I would like to talk about capacity issues and also reopening schools. I'm a parent of some Albuquerque Public School children and have been trying to work this entire pandemic. And I found that COVID is really the straw that has broke the camel's back when it's come to showing some of the deficiencies in our education system, in our culture, in our society, such as, issues of buildings, feeding children, and capacity, just as the previous caller has brought up, if we needed to social distance, mm-hmm. what would it look like, really, if we tried to do the math behind it. But in regards to capacity, I do want to encourage you to perhaps maybe start sending more information out to parents and educators, showing what other neighboring states and even other nations are doing, bringing students back full-time, full capacity, where people are not getting sick, and it is not a source of infection and spread because people are wearing masks and they're dedicated to the purpose of being back. And if you just go to any daycare facility or any school that is open right now, and you look at the teachers and you look at the students, you'll see how good they're being and how hard they're working to stay open. And I think we need to give more credit to the people who are open right now and learn from them to see how this is done. And also look at the numbers, look at the data and the information that's coming in from other sources. I want to emphasize, too, that we are not Florida, we're not Arizona or Texas or New Mexico, and we have a very shuttered state. So those super spreader events are not linked to school opening. They're linked to open beaches, churches at full capacity, parties and things like that. So,
okay. Well, thank you so much for calling in. Erica, we do have to go to a quick break. You are listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Ty Bannerman, and we will be back in a moment.
The Cherokee Nation is celebrating 200 years of their written language. The Cherokee Syllabary helped forge the first native language newspaper and continues to help keep the language going strong. We'll hear the history and continued importance of the Cherokee Syllabary on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, Dr. Anthony Fauci on why this pandemic has revealed the deep health inequities in the country.
When we get out of this, make sure we commit ourselves to the decades-long correction of those social determinants of health.
That's next time on Latino USA.
That's Latino USA, Monday mornings at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. Are you ready for schools to start in-person learning again? What are some of your concerns about sending your kids back into the classroom? There is still time to call in this morning at 277-5866. Now, last night, the Albuquerque Public School Board, which represents the largest school district in the state, met to decide on when APS will adopt one of the models proposed by the state for welcoming students back into the classroom. However, after meeting for a few hours, they voted to table the decision until February 17th. At the same time, around 100 APS staff and faculty gathered for a car rally outside the APS headquarters yesterday afternoon, actually, calling for the board to not begin hybrid learning until Bernalillo County is in the green zone in terms of cases and its positivity rate, or until all staff who want one can get a vaccination. For more on yesterday's protest, you can tune in to All Things Considered tonight at 5 p.m. for a report from KUNM's Nash Jones. And I want to welcome into this conversation Ellen Bernstein. She is the president of the Albuquerque Teachers Federation, which is the union representing Albuquerque's teachers. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. I want to talk about the board's decision first. What is your reaction to them choosing to table this discussion until the 17th?
The board met for 6 hours last night and had a very complex discussion about all the factors that go into starting hybrid. And I just want to say they took everybody's concerns very seriously. They heard all sides. And in my opinion, what they ended up with was the fact that there are many things to work out before hybrid is ready. Mm-hmm. And they are not negating the possibility in any way. They're just asking the administration to consider a lot of what we've heard since the governor made the announcement that we can resume in hybrid as soon as February 8th, but left it up to the local school board to make the best decision for their community.
Now, of course, the union represents teachers. What are the primary concerns that you're hearing from teachers in advance of plans to reopen?
Well, I hear from teachers. Some are saying, I want to go back in person, and they're ready, and they'd like to do it for their personal teaching, whatever they feel comfortable with. They're ready to start hybrid. Some people, especially educators with underlying health conditions, are very fearful about starting. And then, as some of your callers pointed out, there are a lot of logistical questions. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the discussions that the board had last night was the idea that what if we start with volunteers, those teachers and other educators that are ready to go back and start working in hybrid and actually working on the logistical questions that we have, like whether the broadband is going to be able to handle that mm-hmm. number of students, how many outlets do we have in classrooms to charge all of the computers, whether or not we can get kids safely on buses and to schools, and how we feed them and move them through the schools. And you know, I think one of the possibilities that the administration and the board might look at is phasing it in with volunteers first. Mm-hmm. From what I've read, they're doing that in the Santa Fe public schools, and that may be part of the plan that the administration develops and comes back to the board with in 2 weeks.
Now, the union is using the slogan "Greener Vaccine," that also a slogan we saw at the car protest yesterday. Could you explain what that means a bit more? Ellen?
Most of the people that I represent really appreciated the first plan or the last plan that the board had adopted. And that plan said when Bernalillo County is in green for 2 weeks, then we'll start phasing hybrid in with the youngest kids first, moving towards the middle and high school kids. And people felt very comfortable with that. But after they created that plan, we started getting the vaccines. And then people said, really, I'm ready to go back as soon as I can get vaccinated. So if you take the people who are ready now, who want to volunteer, the rest of those people are saying, green, Bernalillo County in green, that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Getting vaccinated, that makes sense to me also. So a lot of people are saying, green or vaccine, whichever one comes first, I'm ready to go back.
Something that we're getting a lot of commentary about through email and that we've heard callers discussing is the incentive for schools to reopen. Is that one of the incentives for them to reopen is that in order for sports to resume, high schools have to be operating on the hybrid model. What is the union's stance on that?
We don't want to keep any student or their family from playing sports. And we're urging the governor and the public education department to decouple the idea that in order to play sports, and we really want to see outdoor sports, not necessarily indoor sports, mm-hmm. start, but we know that they're ready to play and that they can work it out in a safe way. But if we're going to phase in hybrid the way the board originally thought, with younger kids coming first, then it will be a long time before the high school kids who rely on those sports and who really want to play to be able to start. So if we decouple that, we can play sports. Kids can get back into the game, literally. But we don't have to have high schools figure out the complexity of hybrid first. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot in high schools to figure out, especially when you consider the spacing and the number of kids we're going to have in classrooms. A lot of high school teachers are saying their rooms just aren't big enough.
Now, we also have joining us this morning Karen O'Reilly, who is a parent with a child in the APS system through the Atrisco Charter School. Good morning, Karen.
Hello, Ty.
So, as a parent, how are you feeling about the APS board's decision last night?
Well, I'm in contact with a lot of parents, APS parents, and I'm hearing from them as well, and we all feel the same way, which is, of course, extremely disappointed. It took the board 6 hours. We sat there for all of it, 6 hours, to decide to do nothing, which really felt like it was summing APS up right now. We feel, you know, we heard Secretary Stewart and the pediatrician, all the science says over and over that it's not only safe for teachers to go to school, but it's often safer than remote learning, and rates of transmission are less amongst teachers working in person than they are amongst teachers working remotely, probably because of the strict safety protocols in school. The CDC even says that we do not need the vaccine, that teachers should be back in the classroom. And at the same time, we have APS, we have the ATF, refusing to accept all the science and all of the statements by pediatricians, other doctors, and go back. And, you know, the New York Times the other day, they compared this denial of science and data and facts on the part of teachers to the denial of the election results on the part of some segments on the right. So you have a situation, we have a situation now where the New York Times is comparing teachers to QAnon, and this is not where we should ever have been. And teachers have lost so much support over this, which is not a good outcome for anyone. Teachers should have gained support and appreciation throughout this. But instead, what we have, what you see all over the internet, in all of these parent groups, is contempt and accusations that teachers are entitled. And that's a terrible outcome. And, you know, the slogan that Ellen Bernstein just mentioned, greener vaccine, I think people are particularly upset over that. It's insulting. Green, we were in green in August. We had 36 new cases a day in the whole state at the time that the ATF still lobbied to keep kids out of school. So we had green. They didn't let us back. They didn't let kids back. So that's simply not true, greener vaccine. I think, you know, I think teachers should speak to grocery store workers and healthcare receptionists and everyone else who's worked for the last year in much riskier conditions with no vaccine, and tell those staff why teachers' lives are more important than theirs, why they should be vaccinated before them, even though they've been home for the entire year while the other staff have gone out to work every day and faced much higher risks.
Okay, Ellen, I want to ask you to respond to that. What are your thoughts there?
I think the caller pointed out what the board was wrestling with last night. It's very different to make a personal decision for yourself and your family and make a decision for everybody's family. And I think that's a very difficult thing to do. What the board was wrestling with is that teachers, counselors, nurses, parents, many of them are ready to go back. We understand that. And there's nothing that this union is saying that negates that personal choice. But when the school board is debating what is the best thing to do for everybody, they're hearing from people who are not ready to go back. And I think one of the things we need to understand is we're not just fighting a pandemic right now. We're fighting fear. And the more we can work out all of the details with voluntary educators going back in the classroom, working with their principals, their custodians, and their bus drivers to figure out some of what people are worried about, that will help us get everybody who is ready to go back into our schools. Everybody I represent knows that in-person learning is best. They want schools to be open. They don't want to be living during a pandemic. I think what we need to do in Albuquerque is work out some of that so that we can phase more and more kids back to in-person learning, which is what we all want.
Okay, I have a call from Mary in Albuquerque. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
What would you like to add today?
Well, I'm a contact tracer for the Department of Health in New Mexico, and your previous caller who talked about kids going back, I think that she had a lot of great points, and everyone else has too, but what can't happen is controlling what happens with the kids when they go home. So what we find is that the school is doing a great job, but the bus driver who brought those kids to school went to Texas and went to a restaurant or went to Uncle Billy's birthday party or went somewhere else where someone came, and that bus driver has COVID, and 2 days later he realizes it. Now all the kids are exposed. Or the little child in the classroom who goes home and grandma went to a casino. And so it isn't just about what happens in the classroom, because certainly there can be great controls, and we've seen other states and other countries that have done that well, but it's the families having a commitment to be sure that they're not going somewhere where they're potentially exposed. And that people say often, oh, I haven't gone anywhere, you know, I've been really good, and then you go through, well, did you go get a massage? Well, yes, they did. Did they go to a hair salon? Yes, they did. And I understand all those places need to be in business, but it's the balance, and the fear is very real fear. I mean, we talk to people daily who have lost someone to COVID, or someone is in the hospital on a ventilator and they're not sure they're going to survive. So it's, in my mind, kids can't go back till the families are willing to make a commitment to not exposing that child so then they don't come back and expose everyone else.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. Secretary Stewart, what are your thoughts on Mary's comments there?
So everything in our society, in our economy, is tightly interwoven, which is why we've as a state have put out strategies across every sector, including education, because it's correct in that sense of what happens in the community affects every other community, and it also affects parts within the community. The work that we've done in schools recognizes this, and we know that there is no getting risk down to zero. But what we have done is put in place all of the safety measures and protocols so that if a confirmed case does appear in the school, we can quickly catch it, identify those close contacts, isolate them, and stop the spread in school before it begins to transmit from student to student or student to teacher or teacher to teacher or other staff member. And we've seen that happen pretty successfully. We haven't seen large outbreaks in our schools. We've had a watch list program now for months where a school would have to close if there are four rapid responses in a 14-day period, and we haven't had a single school that has hit that threshold. And so while I do agree that the community interactions make a big difference, that's why we have the safety measures that we do.
Okay. Thank you, Secretary Stewart. Now, back to you, Ellen Bernstein. Some parents, like Karen, have been critical of the union for pushing against in-person teaching to protect teachers. They feel that the kids are really struggling by not having in-person learning. How are you and the union working to kind of balance these important considerations?
Well, we know kids are struggling, and so are the teachers. They are working so hard and are literally exhausted by the amount of effort and time it takes to do their work remotely and do best by their students. And we're not trying to keep people from going back into hybrid learning. That's not our point. Our point is that we need to do it in the most thoughtful way possible. And there are still things that we need to work out. And I know it's difficult. If I have a healthy child, and I have kept that child healthy, and they are ready to go back into school, I understand that. But other parents who have kids with asthma or other conditions, they're choosing not to send their child back. And just the logistical matching of how you figure out which families are ready to send their child back and have hybrid learning and which staff members, some of whom have asthma or other conditions themselves and are truly fearful that if there's only one person that is infected when they go back into the building, that it might be them.
Okay, well, we are going to have to wrap up. The music started. That is all the time we have today. Thanks to everyone who called in to share your thoughts. Thanks so much to our guests, Secretary Ryan Stewart, Dr. Melissa Mason, Karen O'Reilly, Ellen Bernstein, and Christine Maley. Let's keep this conversation going. Share your thoughts on Twitter, hashtag Let's Talk NM. On Facebook, search for your KUNM radio or email letstalk@kunm.org. If you missed part of the show, you can stream it online. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Yasmin Khan screened your calls. Taylor Velasquez live tweeted the show. Megan Kamrick produced. I'm Ty Bannerman. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.